Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesztc.org.
People who hold my view based on deeply held religious convictions aren't going to simply surrender those things. We can't. For us to change our views on marriage and sexuality would mean repudiating what we believe has been handed to us by Jesus and his apostles.
I am over creative pastors. Don't be creative on me. Don't think you're smarter than those who put the liturgy together, the church fathers, and those that have given us our hymnal. Don't think you're smarter. You're probably not.
As a child, I've heard the voice of my father who says, "You're holy, you're forgiven, you're righteous." And my confidence is the confidence of a child that says, "That's what my dad said about me."
Duluth, Minnesota letter carriers love Issues, etc.
Well, there's no doubt that this thing accelerated unbelievably. It was, what, less than 10 years ago when this was just working its way state by state through the courts and through various legislative measures. The whole issue of changing the definition of marriage in the civil courts, it sped up, it accelerated exponentially. How did it do it? Well, many looking back now, as it suddenly swept over us in the Supreme Court's decision from almost a week ago, realized that a big factor here was that business got on board. And we watched business get on board over the last year and a half. One of the ways we watched it get on board, do you remember Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act? The backlash against that? There was corporate backlash against it. All part of, well, all various threads in one fabric that led to the redefinition of marriage and the continuing expansion of that definition inevitably in the courts now that big business is on board. Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's hour two. We're going to spend the first part of it with Dr. Patrick Deenan, professor of constitutional studies at the University of Notre Dame. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. It's Christ in the Old Testament, our weekly series with him. We'll be looking at Ezekiel chapter 2, the call of the prophet there. Joining us to talk about the corporate backlash to Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act and its connection to the Supreme Court's decision that was taken on Friday almost a week ago, Dr. Patrick Deenan. He's a David A. Posentanzi Memorial Associate Professor of Constitutional Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and he's author of a recent column for First Things titled "The Elite, the Power Elite." Dr. Deenan, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you for having me.
What's your reaction to the Supreme Court's decision of Friday?
Well, on the one hand, I think, like many people, I wasn't surprised at the outcome and decision of the case. But on the other hand, as someone who's on the other side of the decision, it was surprising the feeling on the next day or even later that day to realize that now those who hold a position opposite to that of the court's decision effectively now are regarded officially, according to the court's decision, as in some respects holding a view that's bigoted or the equivalent of racist. And that's a very worrying situation and position to be in.
You write about the power elite. What do you mean by that term?
Well, the power elite was actually a title of a book by C. Wright Mills, a sociologist in the 1960s, 1970s. And what struck me about the RFRA Indiana moment was not so much the political sides that emerged from that debate, but the role especially of corporations and various kinds of businesses and organizations in really, I think, affecting, enforcing the Indiana legislature and governor to change that legislation.
So how did it go down with Indiana's RFRA law? Tell us the story again and refresh our memories, and then what do you think really happened there?
I guess the backstory is that Indiana, like many states, had passed a Religious Freedom Restoration Act modeled on the federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was passed unanimously in the Senate and House, nearly unanimously in the House of Representatives in 1993 and signed into law by Bill Clinton. So in some 20 years ago, this was an uncontroversial issue, but obviously in the light and wake of issues relating to gay marriage, this has now become an extremely controversial issue. And so what was I think really striking about that moment was the way in which now what had once been understood in a bipartisan way as something that's in keeping with the American tradition, at the heart of the American tradition, was now regarded as really just a kind of cover for bigotry and effectively the same thing as irrational forms of discrimination. So it's a striking change. And what struck me especially was the role of large corporations. Apple, for example, was particularly prominent in taking sides on that position, something they don't really often do in political matters. And it seemed to be a real signal of something that has fundamentally changed in regard to this issue, and in particular religious liberty, and the role that large, very powerful corporations were playing in this issue.
How do you explain that? How do you explain the relative quietism or neutrality of large corporations up to that point? And then on this very issue, it just seems strange to me, on this very issue, so fundamental to Americans' view of freedom, religious freedom, they suddenly are activated.
Well, I think what it did signal, and you know, corporations will generally avoid any kind of political controversy. They don't want to lose some percentage of their customers unnecessarily. What it really did signal was, I think, the extraordinary success of gay rights activists in defining the opposition effectively as bigots, as people engaged in irrational discrimination. That became then a kind of allowed for large corporations to jump onto that definition and side with one political position in the name of being free of discrimination, racism, and bigotry. Of course, what was also ironic about this was corporations like Apple actually engage in business practices in countries that have really reprehensible records in women's rights, gay rights, et cetera, selling and having manufacturing in places outside the United States. So it was really, it seemed to me, at least in part, a kind of public relations campaign on their part to be what is now regarded as on the right side of history.
Is it more than simply wanting to cement their place to be on the right side? Is it just the basic fear of litigation?
That might be part of it, but it seemed to me that if that was a fear, they wouldn't even have to be involved or publicize this at all. I think at the base, and what I make the argument I make in the article is that in some respects you could say that the whole general movement of sexual liberation has conformed pretty closely to kind of a consumer model, a model of a kind of individual choice that I think animates business and corporate life and community generally. So a kind of emphasis on personal, individual, free choice and consumption not only now defines the way we think about the marketplace, but now defines the way that we think about marriage and family. It was just another mode of being, a kind of having a kind of identity as a consumer, an identity as a someone who makes choices about the kinds of people we're with, et cetera. And that's a very different understanding of family life and marriage, I think, than that which animated America even, you know, 20 years ago.
Well, that's intriguing because one might then ask, do you think it was the overall kind of consumerist mentality was actually fostered for their own purposes by big corporations? And then it sounds like what you're saying is them jumping on the bandwagon wasn't really a change of mind at all. It was just a further application of their ethos.
Yeah, I think at the deepest level, you could say that what we've seen taking place over America, this is a long-term process, is really a country that we could say that always had some understanding that there's a space where the kind of consumer mentality should stop. So it shouldn't necessarily define our relationships in the household and the family. And it's a place where it's appropriate, it's specifically in the marketplace. But so much of our lives now are shaped and framed by a definition of ourselves as consumers and a way in which everything is now framed in terms of marketing and consumption, that it seems to me that the way in which this issue played out and the corporate role in playing it out this way was really the culmination of a set of trends. So I would say that they were jumping on a bandwagon and in some ways they had a big hand in helping to get underway.
What does the new alliance between, as you call them, the economic power elite with the cultural power elite, what does it mean for the average employee, consumer, the small businessman?
I do think one of the things that it means is that it will be increasingly difficult, obviously, with given the nature of the current marketplace and the major role that these kinds of companies play, for anyone to really come out in opposition to the decision of the court in a way that could be identified or publicly acknowledged, and not to have repercussions in their professional lives, in their, you know, potentially in their personal lives. We saw what happened to Brendan Eich with Mozilla for a donation that he made at a time when even President Obama was still evolving into his current view. So that it was a kind of retroactive punishment. So it seems to me that we have now a kind of combination of a very powerful cultural players, political players, media, business, forming a kind of new power elite over a question that even a few years ago we could have regarded as something that reasonable people could disagree over, that now is becoming something of an enforced orthodoxy and departures from which will not be tolerated.
What does it mean for the Republican Party that at least popularly is associated with economic power elitism?
Well, I think that the one of the reasons why the article that I wrote received quite a bit of attention is that I think it called attention to the fact that what had become a kind of assumed coalition between business interests and sort of Republican Party interests and social conservatives, Christians, et cetera, is now over. That's done. I think that coalition, which was really shaped and formed out of the Cold War, was one that could be assumed fairly easily and for a long time. And what struck me especially, I think, was the way in which for so long we've heard people on the political left of our political divide denounce the role of money, of corporations, of their undue influence on political outcomes. Well, in the Indiana case, there was anything but that kind of denunciation. There was a kind of celebration of the role of corporations in advancing those terms. So I think that what we're really seeing is a real redefinition and a real sort of a rejiggering of political alignments, and one in which I think social conservatives and Christians are really going to find themselves increasingly isolated and alone.
Finally, do you think that corporate America is confident that they're not going to suffer any kind of backlash from natural marriage proponents?
What's really extraordinary about this is that, in fact, not only are they not afraid of it, but there hasn't been a backlash. Right? I mean, when the news broke that there was a small pizzeria in rural Indiana, the owner of which said they would not be interested in serving a gay wedding, they weren't even asked to do so. It was simply a hypothetical. The entire force and might of our sort of cultural elites came down on that little pizzeria in rural Indiana. But when Apple and Walmart and NASCAR and ESPN, et cetera, all come out in favor of gay marriage, there's not really any kind of reaction from the Christian community. So it's a really striking thing that what we see is a kind of energy of kind of, you know, the willingness to boycott and denounce really on the side right now of those who are really winning the cultural wars. So that confidence seems to be, for whatever reason, it seems to be merited because there hasn't been any kind of negative implication from those stances.
Dr. Patrick Dineen is David A. Potenziani Memorial Associate Professor of Constitutional Studies at the University of Notre Dame, author of a recent column for First Things titled The Power Elite. You can read it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Dineen, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We'll do our regular series with him on this Thursday afternoon, the 2nd of July. Christ in the Old Testament will turn to Ezekiel, the 2nd chapter, the call of the prophet. Stay tuned.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Lutheran Service Book is a hymnal with more than 600 hymns, Luther's Small Catechism, 150 psalms, daily prayers, and more. And you can take it with you wherever you go with the new Lutheran Service Book ebook edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, a devotional resource when you're on the go. Lutheran Service Book ebook edition, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, issuesetc.org.
Faith Lutheran Church and School in Plano, Texas preaches Christ crucified. Join us each Lord's Day to hear law and gospel preaching and receive the Lord's Supper. Our classical preschool through grade 12 Lutheran school is second to none. The school serves home educators, too, with online classes in the high school. We are located at 1701 East Park Boulevard in Plano, Texas. Reach us by phone at 972-423-7448 or on the web at www.flsplano.org.